Is your team not performing well? Is morale low and turnover high? Are you falling further behind the competition? I'm here to help. I'm your host, Shaney, and this is the Leadership Show, where business strategy and culture finally meet, and we make the long-awaited shift from rhetoric to results. I promise I'm not your typical boring leadership consultant, and I will help you get your shift together. Let's do this.
Hello, Leadershifters, and welcome to another episode of the Leadership Show with Shaney. Folks, we are bi-coastal today because I am down in South Florida trying to keep myself away from the spike in COVID cases. And I am joined today by someone who is quickly becoming a soul sister for me, Laura Gates, joining us from Marin County, just north of San Francisco. And Laura is founder of the Gates Group. She's an executive coach. She does a lot of culture and organizational change work. So that is one of many, many things we have in common. And one of her specialties is conflict resolution, which I know is a hot topic on a lot of people's minds now and frankly always. And one of the things I'm most excited for her to share with you all is her intellectual property called the Purpose Initiative, which helps individuals and teams really tap into their creativity and innovation. So we'll get to chatting about that soon. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Shaney. So happy to be here. And like you said, it's delightful to find all these things in common that we have together.
Exactly. Not the least of which I just shared with Laura before we started. She is the spitting image of one of my cousins on my mom's side of the family. So I feel like somehow, you know, sister from another mister, whatever the cliche is.
Or synchro destiny, as Deepak Chopra calls
yes,
it.
Yes. Okay. So we obviously have a lot in common in terms of what we're trying to help people accomplish in the workplace, both as individual leaders and leaders of teams. And really we could have this conversation at any time in history and there would be something relevant to talk about. But right now there's so much juice between the pandemic, which has spilled over into, you know, lots of economic uncertainty, to put it mildly, right? And everything that's been going on with racism and anti-racism and so many other movements of collective awareness that are arising during this odd year of 2020. So let's start by focusing on some of the really interesting things that you do with teams. So give us just kind of a brief overview to start, and then I'll start digging in and asking some more specific questions.
Yeah, and I just want to pick off where you just started, which is this triple threat of the virus, the economic downturn, and the anti-racism movements that's happening in our country. And it really is fascinating that even though the virus is a global pandemic, there's something very unique happening in the United States and how we're responding, and the various different ways that leadership is responding to that,
yes.
Right? And so we're all getting like a big life lesson on leadership. And I find that fascinating, just to as someone who works with leadership and is trying to create more conscious leadership on the planet, I'm just fascinated to watch how different leaders practice and apply these tools in their work and in their lives. And I also feel like we are just in a huge time of change and shift. And I was in a call with a bunch of other leadership coaches earlier today, and we were talking about how our clients are like clinging to the shore and saying, you know, I just want to go back to the way it was, or when things go back to the way it was. And meanwhile, we have the Facebooks of the world and the Salesforces of the world and the Twitters of the world saying, we are not going back to our offices. 50% of our people or more are going to be working remotely.
Yep.
And the face of work is going to be dramatically changed when we come out the other side of this. So what I'm feeling is that, you know, people are really examining their lives and their choices. And as you and I talked about at the beginning, where they live, where they work, now that that is being decoupled in a way where maybe I don't have to commute to my job,
right,
that is creating this opportunity of self-reflection. And I can't tell you how many clients I've had who have moved, who have gotten rid of offices and said, we're a remote company now,
yep,
who've hired people from all over the globe because they don't have to hire down the street anymore. So not only are we having a shift in our own personal experience of this, but the whole definition of a team is changing and evolving.
Absolutely. So, you know, that's
who used to gather in a certain location, or, you know, I'll talk to someone who's on the East Coast, but they fly to California every month to meet with their team. They can't do that anymore. So this idea of, you know, when we go back to the office, some people don't want to go back to the office, and some companies didn't like that model anyway. And now this is just the opportunity to make that shift.
For sure. And, you know, it's funny because I've been waiting for this to happen for a long time. That what my role before I became an executive coach and leadership development consultant, I was COO of a marketing company that had been brick and mortar in Washington, D.C. for 30 years. And just before I joined, the owner decided to take the entire company virtual. And he did this in 2005. So he was on the bleeding edge of sending people to work from home. And he moved to Colorado, where I was living at the time. He had been a second homeowner there and was like, why am I living in, you know, wherever he was living when I could be living in the beautiful, glorious mountains? And when he got to Colorado, he realized, I want to ski all winter and I want to golf all summer. And, you know, I don't really want to be bothered running this business. So long story short, he hired me and I helped him transition this company from brick and mortar, traditional, to an all virtual company. Our people were all over, the clients were global. And of course it expanded our talent base. And when I did that job for almost 5 years. And one of the early niches that I tried to get into when I started consulting in 2011, 2012 was preaching that gospel, and people were not ready. And yeah. I was like, you guys, like, because I think some of the mindset of baby boomer leaders was like, oh, it won't work. If I can't see people being productive, they're screwing off and da, 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 da. And now they're forced to see what's possible.
I mean, I led a team facilitation at the end of February, and one of the topics was, can we have employees work from home? Is that even an option? And I talked to the team 2 weeks ago and I said, so now we know the answer is yes. Next question. You
yeah,
know?
Exactly.
It's like what people thought was impossible 3 months ago. It's like, we're not even questioning that right now, right? It's like, we know that it works and we know that it's possible. And then there's this question of, do we take it to the next step? Do we want to even go further in that direction and make this a thing versus going back to the way we were?
Yeah.
Which, as I said, I just think this is, it's not just a response to a virus and the future of dealing with a virus. It's really fundamentally making us ask deeper questions around,
yes,
what does work like look like? What does family look like? What people are realizing. I just got off the line with someone. He said, you know, Laura, 3 hours a day I spent commuting, and he was 20 minutes from his house in California. This is the kind of crazy traffic we have.
I know, I hear you.
And he's like, I've gotten those 3 hours of my life back. I don't want to give them away ever again. Or people who say to me, I'm spending more quality time with my family. I don't want to give that up when I go forward. So someone was saying to me this morning, like, we're rewiring our systems over this time. And I think that's also a fundamental shift, is that stress and that pressure of getting up and going and running and running and getting on planes. And that's the life I was living. And I thought it was great. I was jacked up on caffeine. I was happy as a camper, you know? And then I stopped and it was like, wait a minute, maybe that wasn't so great. I was kind of tired. I was kind of stressed. I was kind of snarky.
Yep. I was the exact same way. I was probably on the road at least 40 weeks last year, if not closer to 45. I kind of stopped counting. And it's like you never unpack the majority of the suitcase because it's just the stuff you take with you everywhere. And it's been so delightful to get better rest and to be able to eat out of my own refrigerator so that my food is my choice more often than not, and to have a consistent exercise routine as opposed to, you know, where can I slip in 15 minutes of something, you know, in a hotel room or whatever. And my well-being has improved so much that I don't want to give it back.
Right. Right. Yeah. So it's not just a question of how do we order our desks and where do people sit and do we take the temperature at the front door? It's a question of if we've had, and I know that not everyone has, and I know that not everybody's been able to live in a space that we have and all of those things. But for those of us who have, it's a question of, do I want to go back to that life? And what would I be giving up in terms of my well-being? And do I even want to stay in the location? I've had at least three or four people in the last month who sold houses in California and moved across country and have just decided they want to be closer to family, or they want to go back to their roots, or, you know, all kinds of decisions.
Right. Or they want to pay $1 zillion for, you know, a postage stamp size house.
Yes. Yes. She says from her postage stamp. Yes.
All right. So let's take this energy of it may not, the likelihood of it going back to how it used to be is low. And maybe not for everybody, but for a lot of people and a lot of companies where being in person isn't a mandatory thing. So from our position as change managers and leadership consultants, let's give folks a taste of what they came here to listen to.
Yeah. So I think, for example, one of the things I see both on an individual leadership and a team leadership aspect is people are realizing, especially now, for example, in California, we've gone, many counties have gone back to phase one of sheltering. And so we're starting to see that we may not be going back till the end of the year, or maybe not until next year, or maybe even 18 months. And so that kind of initial sprint of we just got to get through 90 days has become, now we're at 4 months. Yep. Now we're saying, okay, if we're not going back, how, both as an individual leader, how do I pace myself? How do I create more sustainability? How do I create more resilience? And as teams, what do we need to do as a team to get more connected, to be more co-creative, be more supportive, as opposed to what I've seen in the past few months is a little bit more like a survival mode, right? Like, how do we just get through this? How do we power through? How do we help our people power through? Now, I think what I'm seeing is teams wanting to get together and sync up on getting more creative and more innovative of, like, what does the future look like? And are we synced up and aligned as a team? Are we cohesive in the messages we're sending and our relationships with each other, because we've just been so busy kind of dividing and conquering these past few months?
Yes, I love that, because it did seem initially in conversations like people were so caught up in the weeds of, oh, we got to make sure everybody, you know, knows how to use Slack and, you know, knows how to do breakout rooms in Zoom and, you know, whatever for their team meetings, that they weren't seeing the forest through the trees and realizing, like, there's the tactical pieces of this, but we got to think a little bit more strategically and long term about how to keep the, you know, the engine purring on this team, and, you know, developing people with skills and continuing to nurture the relationships. So absolutely. Yes.
I'm glad onboarding to see that you're new employees. Yeah. Onboarding employees virtually, bringing people into the company who are in a different location or a different country. How do we sync as a team that's global when you're in Tokyo and I'm in California? And so finding ways to reconnect. And one of the things I'm suggesting, for example, to clients is longer meetings. So instead of the 15, 30 minute one-on-one, sometimes people might need more time, need a little more attention than they did before. The other idea is getting together as a team and talking about, you know, what is our vision? What is our purpose? If we step out of this survival mode of just reacting to some external forces, what is it that we want to create given the current reality, knowing that we don't really know where it's going? And this is what drives people crazy, right? People want to know, when is it going to end? When do we go back? when can I have control back, basically, right. is what people want.
Yeah. And yeah. Good so luck with that, people.
And that's that whole thing of how do we navigate ambiguity and chaos, right?
Yeah.
And so I think there's this way that we can support teams with being more creative and innovative through this ambiguity and chaos. I think there's the symbol, the Chinese symbol for crisis and chaos is the same thing, you know?
So oh, like, interesting.
Or, I mean, chaos and opportunity, crisis and opportunity. I think that's the same symbol. And okay. you said that at the beginning, like we could see this as a crisis or we could see this as a whole opportunity to shift something that I know a lot of people have been thinking about these things and experimenting with things, but this is really the chance to go full on with
it. It's a gift if you let it be, if you have the right mindset and about what you're learning and what you can do differently and what you value. So let's dive into one of the primary tools that you use to help teams tap into that creativity and innovation, pandemic or no pandemic, the Purpose Initiative.
Yes.
So walk us through first of all, what's sort of the derivation of it, and yes. walk us through anything you feel comfortable without, you know, giving away the cow.
Sure. And you can see examples of this on my website. So I'm okay. not, you know, it's not locked in a safe somewhere. I'm okay. someone who likes to share. People can, you know, use whatever tools that I put on my website. I have a whole leadership toolkit there that has lots of raw materials.
And fantastic.
But, you know, it is kind of a funny story because I was speaking with someone and they were asking me about my coaching experience and my background. And then later on, I found out they said to someone, well, she doesn't really have a process. And I got kind of annoyed by that. And I thought, well, you know, who gets to have a process and who doesn't?
Yeah.
And why can't I have a process if I want a process? How come I don't have a methodology? And I was on a flight from Santa Fe to San Francisco and I just decided, well, and I don't know about you, but I got most of my work done on planes. So now yes. I've got to figure out a way to replace that. But
yes,
you know, I really forced myself to think about in the 25 plus years of coaching that I've done with hundreds of clients for tens of thousands of hours, like what did I see the commonality for those who shifted? And it's basically very simple and basic things, but applied to each person I work with. I see the coaching engagement, if you figure like, let's say 6 months with someone or 6 months with a team, the first part of it is making the unconscious conscious. Mm-hmm. So becoming aware of our patterns, our beliefs, our fears, what are the obstacles that get in our way? And that's the work of self-awareness, emotional intelligence, and yep. really taking a hard look in the mirror. You and I were talking about feedback instruments. This is where we look at, you know, what's my Myers-Briggs type? What's my DISC? What are my colors? What's my Enneagram? What's my Berkman profile? Right. What's my leadership circle? Because by the time you and I coach someone, they're at a very certain level of leadership that they know, you know, am I a tiger or a lion or a fish? You know, they've been analyzed to death with all these things. So there's this level of, where do I get in my way and how do I not let that stop me? Now,
yep.
we could do a lot of analysis on that and root cause and where they came from, but because we're in the world we're in and because we're working with fast-moving companies, we have to shift that pretty quickly from self-awareness to getting out of our own way to acting and behaving in different ways. So the second part of it is disruptive experiments. And again, that's taking a page out of Silicon Valley. I thought of that after reading Elon Musk's biography, where I thought, boy, this guy is just fearless. Like he takes his own money and he puts it into all these crazy ideas and they're actually working.
Yeah.
And I remember a time where NASA people would roll their eyes if you talked about this guy, and now they're putting stuff up in space together. So, you right. know, this idea of being disruptive, and now we have a disruptive experiment called COVID-19, right?
Yes, we do.
So it's like we've been handed this disruption. What do we do with that? And the idea is what I say, taking experiments to move the dial. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to quit my job and move across country, although sometimes that is it. But it's like, I'm afraid of having hard conversations. I'm going to start addressing things with people. Every day I'm going to give myself a challenge of having a hard conversation. Or I tend to procrastinate. Every day I'm going to do the hardest thing in the morning first. Or It could be, you mentioned exercise, you know, that can be a disruptive experiment, not if we're doing it from a place of self-punishment, but from a place of, I want to try a different structure in my life. Uh-huh. So a lot of times when I'm working with people, time management is a challenge. Time for thinking strategically is a challenge. So I'll make them put their screen up on the Zoom call and I'll make them justify what's on their calendar and why they need to be in their subordinates' meetings or mentoring someone who they haven't been working with for 20 years, who they just promised to mentor, or whatever the things are that are taking up their time.
Yep.
And that ties in a little bit to something that really impacted me, which was Gay Hendricks' book, The Big Leap, where he talks about operating out of our zone of genius.
Okay.
And he talks about operating our best and highest good and delegating and outsource as much as we can of the things that we're not good at or that we're really good at, but we shouldn't be doing anymore. So one of the challenges that I tell my clients, and this is just between them and I, but I say, tomorrow you are fired from your job. You can no longer do that job because that job is your zone of excellence and we need to get you in your zone of genius. So you need to delegate everything you're really good at to those great employees that you hired who are perfectly capable of doing those things. And even if you're sitting there by yourself quietly with nothing to do, I want to see what the universe is sending your way. Because you're so busy trying to prove how great you are, but you wouldn't be in this job and you wouldn't get the salary if you weren't great. What I want to know is what your genius is and how do we unlock that and how do we unleash that? And that's both true for individuals as well as teams. Because if you're in a team meeting and everybody's trying to one-up each other about how great they are and how they have the right answer and aren't they the boss's favorite, you're not going to unlock that collective genius in the team. Or if everybody's conflict avoidant and they're waiting for the manager to say something before they add their two cents or whatever are, or the conflicts, like you mentioned, all those team dynamics, as Patrick Lencioni talks about, the five dysfunctions of a team, you know, that get in our way of really being creative and innovative together.
Absolutely. It's amazing what happens on teams because they don't set the stage properly to begin with. And then they're cleaning up broken glass instead of, you know, setting the table properly. Somewhat similar, but mixed metaphors. Okay. So that's step two, kind of this disruptive experimenting a la Elon Musk and getting into action. See what happens. And so then what's step three?
So we look in the mirror, we see this isn't working. As Marshall Goldsmith says, what got you here won't get you there.
Get you there.
This isn't getting me there. Okay. So what do I need to do? How do I disrupt that? And so we try these experiments and what people notice is, wow, I have more time. I have more space. I'm less emotionally reactive. And that's where we see we enter what I call the genius field. So this is where synchronicity happens. This is where you and I are talking and it's like, we're just firing on all these cylinders. It's where, you know, really where magic happens in tea is when, and you know, I can't tell you how many clients say, you know, they'll get to one point where they'll say, I feel like I'm not working hard enough and I don't have enough stuff in my calendar. I'm like, great. This is where you have space and where your temptation is to fill it right away. And
with
and
minutia.
Right. And I want, you know, don't answer, you know, just fill it with your email. No, I want you to really make this space and take advantage of this space. And I can't tell you how many times they say, you're not going to believe what happened. I was asked to do this merger and acquisition with this client. I was given this high level project. I was asked to move to, you know, the Netherlands to head up a new office. I mean, it's just unbelievable when people get out of their own way, the opportunities start to come to them. Or the teams start to really shift and have more collaboration and creativity. I have a client I worked with, they do trainings globally all over the world for young women and girls in low-income situations where they didn't have like good Wi-Fi or computers. They had to they were considering waiting until 2021 to do their programs. But I said, you have all these people waiting. You have the technology, shift it over. And within 30 days, maybe even less, they shifted everything virtually. And, you know, the creativity that created, the energy that gave them, instead of being stuck with the victim of like, oh, we can't do this. We're going to have to scale back our staff. We're going to have to cut our programs. They just completely shifted into this more creative, innovative, how do we make it happen mode. And they did it in a fraction of a time that most companies would have taken.
Good for them. And let me pause right now to address the watchers and listeners. Did you hear that? This particular organization not waiting for life to return to normal, because guess what? It isn't going to return to normal anytime soon, if ever. And there are ways to pivot whatever you were doing in person, whether it's offsite or team coaching, to virtual. Like, we can handle it. And there are so many benefits of continuing to have these conversations versus just waiting. So if you're in an organization that's sort of frozen learning and development, or is not doing conferences and not doing offsites, or even any sort of team building, like, reconsider that stance, because it's a mistake.
Yeah, it is really interesting. The clients who say to me, you know, I've had clients who've paused everything, and I have clients who say, this is my lifeblood. Like, I need this more than anything. So it does, I'll just say, sometimes feel a little short-sighted to me when we, you know, when we ask the programs that are about helping leaders and their well-being and their ability to navigate these times, right? But we'll see how that all turns out in the end.
Yes, yes. Okay, so let's talk about the ugly face of Teams, which, you know, is a reality, and some of your tips and tricks and recommendations for conflict resolution. There, and I'll just share with the folks who are listening, there was an article written about your process called Cleaning Up Corrosive Interpersonal Dynamics. I just think that is so colorful. I love it. Corrosive.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the things I do is I send that to clients for a homework pre-read. And I always say, I know it's not this bad. The title is a little bit provocative, so I'm not saying you guys are corrosive, but just here, read this article. So there's a couple things that I see. One is, I remember I was facilitating a team, and these were a group of founders who'd worked together for, like, I don't know, 20, 30 years. They'd known each other since college. And for the last 3 years, there was just some tension in the team, and they weren't as effective together. And
when 3 years.
3 years of tension. Yes. After 30 years of working together. And when we sat down and talked, and, you know, we were just like in a living room having a glass of wine. We had a very low key conversation, just the founders. We took them outside my hunch was to take them away from the rest of the team for a couple hours. And, you know, it was one thing that happened in a board meeting where one guy kind of looked sideways at the other guy and said something, and that guy started shutting down. And ever since then, he was just like withdrawn and disengaged. And when we traced it back to that root cause of that moment, it was just stunning to see the realizations on everybody's part. Like, it's not like they consciously knew that. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to hold a grudge against you for 3 years. But when we dial back into it and they remembered the scenario, because I was like, when did this shift? When did this change from being these college buddies that were having a great time together to being kind of divisive? So what I often see is there are usually root causes to these tensions that can be over years that we, you know, one of this is kind of a root cause analysis, trying to just be a researcher to dig down of, like, where did the tension start? The other thing I see is when I go in for team conflict or team tension is I see team cultures in kind of these three, I have like a triangle with three sides. One is the people side, the other is the structure side, and the third is the strategy side. And often when I go in the people door, like, oh, Laura, these people are having a conflict, I'll see that either the structures are not clear or the strategies are not clear. So people's roles and responsibilities might be overlapping, or the expectations of what they're there to do are different. Oh, I was hired to clean up the department. I thought I was here to preserve the legacy. You know, so then you've got people who are at odds with each other because the strategy is not aligned. So for me, I'm kind of going in like a diagnostician of what's the root cause of this, and does it fit into one of these three buckets of a people problem, a structural problem, or a strategy problem? And yeah. then we can work with that. We can say, oh, your roles and responsibilities aren't clear. Let's create clear roles and responsibilities. Let's be clear on our expectations. Let's align on the strategy. Now, if it is all about the interpersonal, then we start talking about things that you and I were talking about, which is the different personality styles, the different approaches. If I'm an introvert and you're an extrovert, if I'm a, you know, if I have bias towards action and you like to analyze things, mm-hmm. we start to pick apart. Again, that goes back to part one of this three-part methodology, is making the unconscious conscious, of understanding my patterns and behaviors and why they clash with yours. And being able to put ourselves in each other's shoes and have empathy. And understand, you know, a lot of times I'm just like, huh, why do you do that? And they explain it. So what happens when they do it that way? And then they, you know, and they're just able to hear each other because I'm asking just out of curiosity. I don't have an agenda. I'm not trying to be right. I'm not trying to take sides. And then they're hearing each other through me asking the questions. They're like, oh, I didn't know that you were like that because of what happened to you 6 years ago. I didn't know that I made you anxious because I talk in a really loud voice. You know, these often simple little things that cause these rifts with people.
Right. And, you know, that scenario is exactly what coaches do. You know, people sometimes mistakenly think that coaches are consultants or right. that coaches are therapists. Well, we're neither of those things. While we right. might use some of those techniques, right, and some of the coaching might be for the goal of deriving some consultative decisions or what have you, a real skilled coach is only asking the right questions and getting people to talk to each other, which still boggles my mind, doesn't happen nearly as often as it should. It's like, one of the things I say is lack of communication is the plaque that clogs the arteries of, you know, the corporate body.
Yeah.
And it sounds obvious, but it we can't just take a statin in an organization and get rid of the plaque, right? Right. We actually have to do some of the, we have to find the root cause and go in and shift things around. So I love that. Okay. So just recapping what we just heard, folks, if you've got something even mildly corrosive on happening on your team, like ask it, like calmly say, you know what? Something's not working. When did this start? Like, can we just independently think back? When did we notice this tension just started? So we can identify the root cause of it, right? Because if there's a process, you know, a problem in engineering or manufacturing, damn well, you're going to do your five whys of Lean Six Sigma and figure out the root cause. We have to do the same thing in interpersonal relationships. And then figure out which lever is, you know, needs to be pulled. And maybe it's all three levels, the people, the structure, or the strategy. And what's funny, again, like so simpatico, mm-hmm. you use a triangle, I use three circles that intersect. And it's people, process, and people, process, and oh my God, I can't even remember my own third P. Purpose, which is, uh-huh. you know, part of the strategy.
Yeah, and that's in the middle of my triangle is purpose. Because, you know, I think the other challenge is that we have this thing called high performance teams, right? And I really think that's on its way out the door because that necessitates, I have to be a high performer, you're a high performer. And that just feeds that same, you know, I've got to be number one and outperform right. you and be the best.
Right. And I only look good by best. Making you look bad or yeah.
Right. Versus, you know, a purposeful team that wants to positively impact their stakeholders and add value and make a difference for people. High performance to me necessitates we're better than you and we're better than all those other teams. So having a purpose of adding value, contributing, making a difference, being of service to our clients and our colleagues and our peers, that creates a different paradigm.
Yeah. And not for nothing, but now is the time. If you don't feel like your team has a purpose or you think the purpose is outdated at this point or just not resonant for your team, now is a great time to revisit your purpose. Examine your values, folks.
Purposes must have expired by now.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I were talking about just even our own business purposes have changed, you know? So yeah, it's, if we're not regularly, I mean, I don't even do that much strategic planning anymore because I feel sorry for the people who invested tens of thousands of dollars in strategic planning in December and had to scrap it all by by March. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I know. It's like, you can't even count on consistency in a quarter anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it used to be, you know, what's the 10-year plan, the 5-year plan, you know?
Yeah.
Who the hell knows what the 10 and the 5-year plan are? If I'm going to ask anyone, it'll be someone we referenced earlier. It's going to be Elon Musk, and maybe he could tell me whether we're going to have an office on Mars or not.
Right.
And how much it'll cost to get there in one of his shuttles.
Right. Well, I know people who know the answer, so.
So good. So how can people reach you if they want to know more about working with you or just pick your brain? What's the best way to contact you?
So my website is GatesGroupLLC.com. So it's the Gates Group LLC and then .com.
Okay.
And I'm on LinkedIn also, easy to reach. And anybody who wants, there's a form on my website if people want to reach out. I'd be happy to chat with people.
Terrific. Well, I so appreciate you being on the show today. This conversation was so much fun, and I really do hope that it inspired anyone who was listening and watching to tap into that all-important creativity and innovation and to take control of this situation, not as a victim, but as an opportunity to leader shift whatever it is that needs shifting in your personal life, your professional life, or any other life that you have out there. So, because we can't even say it's the new normal. You know, the phrase that I've been using with some other folks in our circles is the now normal.
Oh, I like that.
Because there's almost like a new normal is going to be the case now, maybe weekly or minimum monthly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I love that. I'm going to steal that. The now
absolutely. I'm like you. I think all of the intellectual property and the turns of phrase, if they help people, have at it because, right, it's an abundant world and we all have something to give and to learn. And I think that's part of what is boiling up in the, I mean, not to be too woo-woo people, but in the collective consciousness right now, right, is a bit more of that awareness that, you know, it's not just about me and there's so much more to think about right now and the importance of relationships and the importance of empathy, you know, some of the things that we've talked about over the past 45 minutes or so. So thank you again, Leadershifters, as always. Thanks for listening or watching, however you tuned in, and we will see you again next time.
Thank you, Shani.